Hey, it's Ron, and welcome to Bush Stories. Our guest is the host of Alberta Wildlife Stories podcast. He's also the creator of it. Fantastic guy, fellow Canadian from Alberta, obviously. He's a hunter. He's got some fantastic stories in line for you guys, and you're going to absolutely love the Velvet Buck. Believe me, it's a doozy. So without further ado, I'd love to welcome Aaron Storr to Bush Stories.
Bush Stories is brought to you by StandingWolfArchery.com. From bow quivers, finger tabs, string silencers, and more. Each Standing Wolf item is made by hand, using materials that only support other American and Canadian small businesses. So if you're looking for rugged, handmade traditional archery gear, visit StandingWolfArchery.com today.
Cool, what's up, guys? We're joined today by the fellow Alberta Wildlife Stories podcast host himself. We got Aaron Storr in the house. Aaron, happy to have you be a guest on Bush Stories, man. We've been obviously chit-chatting behind the scenes, so now it's your turn to be on the other side of the page and be the guest. You're usually the host, now you're the guest, so I'm happy to have you, and I'm happy you're my guest. So.
Oh, man. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on. I feel almost, I don't know if naked is the wrong word, but a little empty-handed. Like, I'm so used to doing probably like kind of what you're used to doing right now, where you're like, yeah, I got like, you know, things on I want to talk to the guest about and all this stuff. And for the first time, I'm just kind of like turning on my computer and I'm like, hey, how's it going? So it's definitely feels weird to be good. Put in the hot seat.
The beauty of being at home doing this, I'm half naked right now. All yeah. Jokes aside, though, man, it's awesome having you here. I could totally understand. You know, I would probably feel kind of out of place too. Being probed, it's kind of like being probed, right? You're kind of like, but it's all good as long as you don't have like any weird secrets to tell. Or
yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I'm all good for it. It's just, yeah, it was funny to, you know, and honestly, and there's no other podcast. Like, I feel honored to be on yours, man. Because like I was kind of saying when we've talked before and stuff, like, just a huge fan of everything that you do and just everybody that you talk to and all the gear and everything you make and put out. And, you know, I've been religiously listening to Bush Stories since you pretty much started pumping episodes out. And same thing, I like to drop your name out there for like on my own podcast. And I think that's what it should be about. I think there's a lot of people that see podcasts as like, oh, this guy's got one, that guy's got one, and it's like competitive. I don't really think of it as that at all. I'd rather, like you said, like kind of pump each other up and enjoy each other's stuff. And yeah, man, it's exactly. I didn't think this would be the one that, yeah, I'd be like first kind of guesting on, just because I thought it was like the traditional stuff is out of my league still. I'm still new and returning into trad, and it's awesome to be here, man. I appreciate it.
Well, I think the returning to trad aspect we'll definitely touch on. I think it's really interesting, like, to go into that with that type of that angle. So I think it's really cool. But obviously, to give people listening or watching a bit of a backstory, you're a fellow Canadian from Alberta, beautiful province. You know, an inside joke is what's the best province? Well, I'm in it, but you're from Alberta, so it's okay.
I knew. I was like, there's going to be some east-west shade thrown here at some point. I knew this was coming.
Inside joke, of course. But yeah, man, I mean, I can only imagine just the hunting in general, what you guys have to work with there. I mean, here in Ontario, the further north we go, obviously it gets better. But you guys have like the hunting playground in your backyard. So it's like, obviously, when did hunting become a part of your life, and like, how did that kind of get going for you? What was the story of that?
Yeah, it's funny. It's total role reversal because I am so used to asking that. It's like a similar thing with guys, but yeah. So for myself, I know there's always that catchphrase tagline of adult onset hunter. That's more or less kind of how I got into it. I, you know, grew up fishing. Like, my dad was super into fishing. We fished all the time. And then probably right after high school and stuff, kind of got out of it. And then few years, like probably in like early 20s, got back into fishing quite a bit. And then that dove into like fly fishing and tying flies and everything. And nice. You know, ice fishing and kind of everything that way. And same thing, like Alberta here, like, yeah, we have some world-class stuff when it comes to the Rocky Mountains and the, you know, eastern slopes of the Rockies with all the rivers and streams and tributaries that come off of there. And that just kind of slowly led into hunting in the 20s as well. And it's, I think for me, what really set it off was, I was always learning a lot of different skills. I'm a pretty, I don't know if it's the right way to say it, but I feel like I can be a pretty obsessive, compulsive person. I get really nitty gritty into things, like same thing with like fly fishing. I couldn't just accept fishing. I needed to tie the fly. Now I need to like tan the hide and use the deer hair from something I've hunted to put on a fly or whatever. I just get so like, I want to do every element of it. And yeah, eventually I was learning a lot of different things in life, and I've always wanted to, you know, explore different avenues and learn different stuff, but I wanted it to be like, maybe skillful attributes. So like I see hunting and bow hunting and traditional bow hunting and stuff like that as something that, you know, is a very positive like life skill to have for many different reasons. And you know, being in Alberta, a lot of guys talk about it. Like we have a lot of truck hunting. We got a lot of guys that will rip around, and again, to each their own, they're doing what they're doing. It's just, I always had this image in my brain that like, if I was going to hunt, I needed a truck. I needed like a cooler. I needed a, you know, a shed that I could butcher in or whatever, like a good garage. And I just had this preconceived notion or something that was maybe incorrect of all this expensive gear that I thought I would need. And don't get me wrong, it can get pricey like any other thing, how much you want to go into it. But once I realized, I was like, oh man, I could just quarter out a deer and put it in the back of my car. I was like, you know, it became more accessible, right? Like once I started to see methods and stuff. And I mean, lo and behold, now, yeah, I'm still driving a truck and throwing a little aluminum boat fishing and stuff. And I love it. But once I started to realize how accessible it was, and really, you know, my family here, my in-laws, they live like right in the bow zone. We've lived on this property in the bow zone for a while, and I didn't even realize like out the back door there has been world-class hunting, beautiful deer, beautiful moose, general archery seasons, like right at my doorstep, basically, that I was not neglecting, but just kind of like taking for granted without even realizing that it was right there, that like people would kill for that opportunity, really, right? So yeah, and then it was pretty much kind of dead set once I realized I could do it myself. And that I was just kind of dove right into it, and really wanted to get more connection to food as well. So I mentioned this prior and stuff too, but I just, my family wasn't really big into gardening. I have some family that grew up in southern Alberta, and they were all farmers and everything too. But for the most part, it was you know, a lot of disconnection to my food. And when I got into adulthood, I was like, man, I want to be growing a garden. And then, you know, now my wife, she's, you know, pretty much almost full Italian and is like, yeah, an amazing gardener. So, you know, now what we're eating with my son for dinner a lot of times is, you know, meat that we've hunted and vegetables we've grown, and yeah, trying to have like a full connection to our food source. And that was like a big thing going into adulthood for myself, to want to kind of rekindle that connection with that stuff. So yeah, long-winded way, yeah, I guess, amazing. Is how that's I got into it.
Yeah, that's the best way. Super awesome. I mean, I think there's a ton of people who want to have that lifestyle now and who are trying to play catch up, and there's just, you know, there's no right way to go about it in a sense. And, you know, there's no bad time to start, but having to start earlier on in life is always an advantage, because like you said, the compound skills only makes it relatively easier. And it's the state of the world right now. You know, that makes the most sense ever. It's the way of the future, I think.
Yeah.
At least for anyone who values health and community and connections, right? I think that's the way.
Yeah, man, I completely agree. And I think it's something that we're kind of coming back kind of full circle to. I hear a lot more guys, you know, wanting to come back to, like, even podcasts, for example, like this, like long form discussions of, you know, people will sit down and listen. I didn't think people would listen to an hour, 2 hour episodes, and everybody's, you know, dialed right in. I'll listen to a 6 hour podcast if it's something I want to hear about, you know, like, and then, you know, even more so going back into kind of like grassroots, like a lot of almost like even that in like, you know, with vinyl or music and everything too, it just seems like there's this resurgence of maybe life without all of the technology. And I don't know, I kind of can go down a lot of rabbit holes myself of like, you know, everyone's talking about AI and all the stuff coming up and, you know, and it's like humanity's path, man. It's like, do we just go straight into singularity of merging with technology and you've got, you know, Google Maps in your glasses or your whatever, or are we kind of going back to these ancestral connections to nature and land and what fundamentally fuels us and keeps us alive on this planet, right? It's a huge topic for sure and a lot to get into and a huge rabbit hole, but
yeah for sure. It seems like there's always two sides of the coin, where one half of the world is probably drawn to go towards that tech path, whereas the other people, I mean myself included, I'm sure like yourself, they feel something inside to go somewhere different and to rely less on that, which by going so far the other way, you know, the natural way, you kind of see things differently. You can observe, maybe that's more of a prison than you realize, or you know, you don't look at the tech as the aiding benefit. The technology becomes more of an observable kind of anchor, more so than an observable, like something that lifts you up, I think, personally. I don't know. It's kind of hard, like you said. The rabbit hole is quite deep. We could probably talk forever about that alone. But yeah. That's why I love traditional. And that was a big reason why I got back into trad, is just the fact how simple it is. It's just so simple. A stick, string, and an arrow. I just like the idea. If I had to go into the bush to survive somehow with my family, I wanted the least amount of mechanical things to go wrong.
Yeah, that's, couldn't agree more, like 100% the drive behind it. I love too, it gives you that connection to your body, right? I think nowadays within society, it's so easy to be just like a head on top of a body and you're just cruising through your day, you know, signing this, typing on that, doing whatever. And we're very disconnected from, you know, ambidexterity, our left and our right arm, and you know, what things like stretching and stuff like that. Like we don't do a lot of, or we don't really connect a lot to our bodies, and traditional archery, especially, like, you know, without that mechanical failure from like a compound bow and stuff like you're talking about, it's like, yeah, like if you're going to screw something up with traditional gear, it's probably your fault, you know, like it's 99% like some sort of poor form or a bad release or, you know, something like that. And I really like that, where you're working more so on yourself and that connection than gadgets and gizmos to get it done. So,
yeah, I guess with trad, the only mechanical failure is your body, right? Like, bad form leads to bad shoulders or elbows. So that's, I mean, obviously there's things that can go technically wrong, but that's kind of where the gist of it lies. Is just the physical mechanics of like trad is really what, like you said, everyone talks about the fundamentals of form and everything like that. And once you get the basics down, then the fun begins. But just to develop that consciousness of what you're doing and to build that technicalities behind it is really, you know, the cornerstones about trad. I love it. Yeah. Like you said, it's the observation of your body and yourself is really where Cardin leans into.
Yeah. And, you know, getting back into it myself, it has been a really, really cool journey. And even like hunting, like there's one thing, like you're saying, to have that connection to ourselves through the shot cycle and the shot process. And then just this year, like hunting with the traditional bow again, it's like, it's already made me a more observant and better like outdoorsman and hunter. Like it's just, you can't slack. There is no slacking on it, but
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, I remember you talking about it on your podcast with your last, maybe your second last guest.
Yeah.
You guys went into detail about it, but you know, talking about your podcast, I mean, I'm just curious, like, how did you even decide to even start podcasting? Like, what was the driving force to even wanting to get started? Cause we were just talking before we hit recording, just the nature of it. And just like, what was the driving force to you saying, you know what, I think it's time to do a podcast?
How did it all get started? This is funny, and I'm gonna after. I want to ask you the same question. I knew this. Yeah, I had a feeling this question was gonna come up, and I'm like, man, I want to know why you did too. But I'm a big fan of podcasts. Like, I listen to tons. So I'm a gas fitter here, primarily throughout the city of Edmonton. And I'm going to different calls throughout the day, driving around a lot, doing 24/7 emergency service and repair and installation, replacement, all this stuff, right? So it involves a lot of driving, and a lot, when any job involves a lot of driving, you're trying to find something to listen to. And going back to when we were talking about like learning valuable things in life, I always think like, oh, this 2-hour drive, instead of, you know, just listening to music, I could be like educating myself on how traditional archers on bush stories do things, right? So I'll tune into a podcast or something like that to try to, I guess, fill that need to want to learn more about different topics and things, or audiobooks and stuff too. But yeah, anyway, I'm just a big fan of lots of different ones, whether it was, you know, the big names everybody knows, or smaller ones, and, you know, anything kind of Canadian made or anything like that too, such as yours. But at some point, I have a big background, like throughout life, skateboarding. And in skateboarding, there's a lot of video editing, there's a lot of audio editing. And then also, since I was about 7 or 8 years old, I played guitar. So I've played music my whole life, same thing, been in a variety of bands and recording music and stuff like that. So the fundamental kind of understanding of recording, editing, video, things like that, was stuff that I just enjoyed in life a lot. And I do a lot, like the kind of the reels that I make up on my Instagram there for the podcast and to promote stuff. And they're all like just made from like a series of little apps and stuff. Like, it's just growing up, and I know you could probably attest to this too, there wasn't a lot of software out there to do different things. And then all of a sudden, through, again, technology, it's weird to get how that kind of technology can be beneficial, but all of a sudden it's like right at our fingertips. Like, the first the first 10 episodes or so that I did of my podcast was just like straight from my phone. So like all the editing, all of the, you know, the software I used, all of the video editing stuff, all of that was just like all from my phone. And I, that's honestly why I started it, because I was like, dude, this isn't going to be that difficult. I already use so much editing software just for fun, just making dorky videos from skateboarding or whatever, you know, like, so I think in one hand there was that, there was like this desire for kind of creativity in life and making things. And then from listening to all these podcasts, I was like, you know, I could definitely do one myself, in the sense of, you know, I don't shut up. This is me continually talking right now. Like, I could just talk forever. And that's sometimes a really annoying characteristic, if you ask my wife. And then, the enjoyment of the creative side of it. And then, you know, tie that with the love for hunting and the province here. And I mean, all of Canada in general, really. But there is just so much stuff here that, you know, we take for granted in our backyard in Alberta, like you were saying, with, you know, some of the world-class hunting we have. And then honestly, listening to these other podcasts, like, everybody knows, again, like the big names in the hunting industry, and there's nothing like, not throwing shade at them at all or anything like that. It's just a lot of people come to Alberta for hunting, right? Like, a lot of people are doing an Alberta trip for bear. They're doing an Alberta trip for elk. They're doing an Alberta trip for bighorns. Like, they're coming here for a variety of wild, you know, species and environment that we have, right? And hunting opportunity that we have. But then it just doesn't get talked about a lot. Like, I just found, you know, there'd be a famous dude that came here and hunted, and there'd be like a video, but they wouldn't talk about, like, you know, Olds or Red Deer or like the small towns or things like that, or the people and stuff, right? So it was just, and again, that's not against anyone or anything. It's just how it kind of goes when people are visiting places like that, and not wanting to give away too much of locations and whatever. But I just really wanted to kind of give a lot of these amazing Albertans and people here, whether it's rifle hunting or bow hunting or trad hunting or really whatever, a place or a soapbox to share similarly, you know, their outdoor stories. Because for myself, you know, the passion for hunting and fishing and stuff, like when we were talking about it being like a valuable life skill, and then traditional, like it, traditional hunting connects me so much to like the past and my enjoyment for learning about like theology and history and anything like that, that, you know, there's just so many avenues to go down. So I inevitably bundled all of that up into what is Alberta Wildlife Stories. And it sounds like a really long run-on description of why I decided to start a podcast, but there's just a lot of different things that I enjoyed doing, and it felt like a beneficial use of my time for not only myself, but a lot of other people, and a good way to direct that energy of creativity and wanting to share like the love for the outdoors and the amazing people, places, and things we have here, right? So,
Yeah, awesome, man. That's really great. Like, congratulations. I love that answer, man, because it's like you're really celebrating like the province. I mean, you know, obviously we're Canadian, but I love how you're taking like to even more of like the community around you. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I was going to ask, has there been like any moments or like guests that like really stood out and made a huge impression on you throughout the episodes you've recorded? Or even even portions within like a particular episode where you're like, whoa, like, it really hit you?
Like it hit me as in like what I was doing with the podcast, or it hit me like them as people were like, oh, this is an amazing story.
It could be an either or. Like if there was a moment in particular that really stands out in your mind that you just, it really impacted you just that you didn't expect when you're talking to that person.
I think what's really funny, and I don't know for yourself, because I know when on Bush Stories, you're talking to a lot of, you know, amazing traditional archers within the traditional community. And I don't know if this is similar for you with vetting people in a sense, but I find it really tough because there's so many people that deserve to share their story in Alberta that, you know, sometimes I've looked at someone's profile and been like, yeah, this guy probably has awesome stories and he'll be a great guest. And then all of a sudden they start talking about the story and you're like, this guy's like phenomenal. You know, you're like, whoa. Like, so I would say, honestly, a lot of guests have taken me back in a way that, you know, kind of mid conversation, I start to realize like, you know, these guys are doing like professional level accomplished hunts, you know, this small window of time they've managed to make it happen. And with all the hard work and dedication and passion, they've been able to, you know, have some lifelong memories through it. So I would say it's kind of interwoven through a lot of conversations. One thing I would say is that I don't think there's necessarily one person or another that's stood out and as just like floored. I mean, everybody does in a sense, but I think the overall community I didn't expect it to start connecting and networking our Albertan community as much as it has been. And I really take a lot of kind of pride in that. Something I really want to do in life is be of service of other people, right? I think that's like one of the best things you can do as a person is to help your community or help people around you or just do things for kind of the greater good, let alone the rat race and the desires of ego to get ahead and everything like that. Right. So, I know for myself, like personally, I can't be a first responder. I don't deal well with trauma and stuff like that. To me, those guys, like frontline workers, military, stuff like that, I'm always like thanking them whenever I can, because it's like, that's a service to your community that like, I can't quite do, but you know, it's an incredible one. But yeah, it's taken me back seeing the way that people have networked. And I think one thing that really, I guess, to give you a more solid answer, and sorry to just go on tangents, but one thing that really stuck out to me was, and this was quite early on the podcast, but I went to a 3D archery shoot and I went to a 3D archery shoot there and had like, there's a target company here called Grizz Targets and Archery that's run by two guys, Derek White and Matt Ponto here, and two really stand up guys. They've been awesome, like supporters of the Albertan community, of the podcast here and everything too. And they had a booth at this 3D shoot, and I was going to this 3D shoot to do like an in-person interview with a couple of guys that go under the name of 91 Straight. And they kind of run this profile about there being 91 days in the general bow hunting season to kind of get everything done and to make it happen, right? And it was more so like, you know, they met Derek and they were, you know, we're these guys, and Derek's like, oh, we're these guys, and they were like, oh, you're the ones doing the podcast with Aaron, right? And it was like when all of a sudden I realized that like I was starting to come up in conversations in a way that was like connecting the community, that I was like, okay, there's this group here and this group here, and what brought them together was like just the commonality of like, oh, you've been on the podcast, or oh yeah, you whatever, and it's not like an ego boost by any means. It wasn't like, oh, they know who I am. It was more just like, whoa, like it was weird that that connection, like that opening conversation they had, like I had a part of, you know, and to kind of connect people that way, and, you know, to see people like guests that I've had, like a lot of guests, and I'm sure same thing for yourself, you've kept up with, and you've kind of started to create, you know, good friendships and, you know, lifelong friends, it feels. And it just seems to, you know, I start to see opportunities that are coming up for other people, and that's really why I wanted to do it, right? Like I wanted to give people that deserve a soapbox somewhere to tell their story. And then once their story's told and they network with the community, well, now they got this opportunity with so-and-so to go and do this or write in this magazine or do that. And it's just super kind of, it's super cool to see that community come together and kind of start to play a role in it. And it took me off guard when we were talking about starting this podcast and stuff like that. I didn't expect there to be much of a following or people to enjoy it too much or anything like that. I really didn't know what to expect. And then to have those kind of things, that's when I kind of sat back and was like, wow, like I'm doing something here that's more than myself, right? Like it's not for me to, you know, be the dude. It's, you know, it's for people to, you know, share their stories because it's incredible, you know, have some sort of chronicle. Like that's the whole thing, right? Is like chronicling Alberta's greatest hunting and fishing stories, right? And it's, people can go back and be like, oh, if you want to hear me tell this story, I don't have time right now, but you could go back to, you know, episode 9 and listen to me, you know, talk about my family and what we're a part of and what we do, right? So it's, yeah, it's cool to have that and create those little pages, if you will, online for people to, yeah, be a part of or beyond. But
that's awesome.
Anyway, that was a really long answer. I feel like I'm already dragging on, but I wanted to ask you that back. What made you start Bush Stories, if you don't mind me asking you that?
Yeah, back. That's no problem. Well, I don't know. I Bush Stories was kind of like, I don't know. I knew I needed to do something to expose Standing Wolf in some way. And in all honesty, kind of like, I thought this could be a way to kind of connect, but also like create content. Because I really didn't know what to do for like, as like a, whether it's like a YouTube thing or whatever, other than like kind of just showing me making gear and stuff like that. So I, in all honesty, everything changed just doing the first episode. I had like a game plan of what I would want to get out of Bush Stories from like a business point of view. But when I started talking to, I think it was Blaine Prowse actually from Stump Stalker Archery. He was the first guy I interviewed.
Nice. Yeah.
Immediately it just changed because now, like you just said, you're actually, I mean, that's why I really like the Zoom thing too, doing interviews video on a, you know, video calls, because obviously I could put this on audio, like whoever's listening to us now, but if we do this on video, I mean, it's not even the after the fact, it's this right now, being able to talk to them like face to face and like get to know them, that changed everything. I mean, the whole plan of what I wanted to do with just creating content went out the door. Now it's just like, I really like talking and learning about people, especially people that's in my space who make other cool things that I want to use, or someone that I've been watching for years, like Jeff Kavanaugh, whoever it may be, where I've like been learning from them on YouTube. Now I'm actually talking to them, picking their brains. Yeah. And it's just, that really was, it just immediately within like 5 minutes, the game plan's out the door. Now it's just, I want to learn more about people and share their stories. Like you just said, it just got so cool. And I think trad being so niche, like, it's super niche. Like, it's, I mean, your niche with just being Alberta. So it's kind of like we're all like within these confines and restraints in a sense. I'm not going to talk about rifle hunting or whatever it might be, but not that I have anything wrong with that, but I'm just, you know, we got to stay relatively niche. Don't want to drift too far, but just talking to people that I've been learning from that make stuff that I personally have been using or want to use, it just changed. I, like, getting to know them on a personal level is the reason why I wanted to keep doing it. Like episode two, like you're talking before, we had Vince Smith. From Lonesome Wind Bows, and I mean, Jesus, the stories, the guy was, I didn't expect it. He reached out, and he's like, yeah, I got some stories, and I didn't know too much about him, but then when he started just blasting them, I was like, holy shit, these are the, it's insane. What people have to offer with stories and their experiences, like, this is the best. It's the best thing ever. Like, it's just so cool. I get to do this. I get to talk to you and, like, hear cool stories and, like, meet people and, like, make friendships from that. It's the best. It's so cool. So it started off in a totally different way where it's like, I guess kind of like a marketing tool, but it just went out the door and it's just, I guess it's a byproduct in a sense. Cause if you want to keep listening to it, that's awesome. But it's, for me, it's just, I just love it. I get to talk to just cool people and, you know, make friendships and, you know, push them too. Like that's what I really love doing. I love to support the community and just like, if you make something, I want to let other people know you make it. Or if you're writing books, I want other people to know about them. So it's like you said, like the selfishness of what it was originally immediately evaporated. And then it's like, this is awesome. What it really is, it's just awesome. It's fun.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with all that more. And something that it reminded me of too, was just exactly how you were saying, like getting to know these people and, you know, like a lot of these accounts, like, you know, for example, like, you know, there's lots of guys, right, that are out making YouTube content or, you know, TV shows for Wild TV or the Sportsman Channel or anything like that, right? And it's unreal to kind of get to know them more, because I think something I not so much like struggled with, but like bothered me was there's so much like social media presence, but I didn't feel like I knew anyone better, you know, like, I followed a guy here like Jeff Dorward from Dorward Outdoor Adventures. I followed him for, you know, years. And, you know, like DJB Outdoors. And there's like just a few guys, same thing, like even with yourself, Ron, through Bush Stories and stuff. You know, like there's guys that I've listened to and like kind of uptaken their content forever, but I didn't really know them anymore as people. And I think a really cool thing about podcasts in general is exactly that, like to just sit down like this, have a conversation with each other, get to know each other. Not only is it like beneficial for the two parties sitting down and talking, but when the world listens to it, it's like people get to learn like, oh, that's the guy behind, you know, Standing Wolf. And those are his values and his morals and what he enjoys. Right. And people really, I think, want that authenticity these days. Like there's so much stuff. And this is why I also even like, you know, the fact that even just myself, there's a lot of other small podcasts, like not to say that we're small podcasts, but you know, like the Sniper's Hide or like the, I can't remember the other name, it's just evaded my mind right now, but it, and you know, they're not, it's not incredible audio quality on the Sniper's Hide. His music is a little bit off, and I'm not trying to, you know, the content that he shares and talks about is so valuable that it's like, I will listen to it. I don't care. You know what I mean? It's like, so I think that's something that's really powerful in the whole like long form discussion podcast thing too, is that you get from it, from like the getting to know people. I get that. Like when you were talking to, why did his name slip my mind? I think it was two episodes ago.
Monty Browning.
Yeah. Browning. That's what it was. Why can't I every time, cause I've heard him on another podcast once before. And he's like a legend, right? Like everybody knows my, and like, man, hearing him talk about stories, like I could hear, listen to that dude tell stories. Like I would, if you just interviewed him 100 times, I'd listen to every episode. Right. But it's just, there's something about, like you mentioned too, like listening to these stories and hearing people tell them, you know, it's just like, people mention that to being like the since the dawn of time, right? Like, since man ever walked on Earth, like we told hunting stories, right? Because that was our means to survival, right? Like, you know, we saw elk over here. If we don't talk about that and go after it, like we might not even be here tomorrow, right? So it's cool to share these stories for a multitude of reasons, but yeah, it's, I think in the same way, like you say, it's really cool to get to know people, and just it furthers that understanding of, okay, now when I see somebody post something on social media, I'm like thinking about, oh, this conversation they had with yourself, or this conversation, you know, you get to almost know people on so much more of a personal level, whether you're a listener or a podcaster or whatever. Yeah. And I love it. Another one that's come up, I'll just want to throw out there. Sorry.
Go ahead.
But another one that came out was Mindy from St. Lawrence Strings that you interviewed.
Oh, yeah. She's awesome. Her husband.
Dude, and it's so funny because listening to them and the conversation you did with them, I was like, okay, like I need to pretty much order their strings. And then I did in that episode, I think you're referring with Travis Brown that took the bighorn here with a longbow.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And he ended up kind of briefly mentioning St. Lawrence Strings. And then I was like, wait a second. I was like, this came up on Bush Stories, right? And then sure enough, like went back in and then got in contact with Mindy and ordered some strings. And it's just that kind of network that it's creating, even in North America or Canada or whatever, right? Like immediately that name came up from listening to that episode with you guys. And I was like, great people to support, like just their overall attitudes. And when you were talking about, you know, the nervousness of drawing back or things like that and different things that they were overcoming, I was like, man, these are real people that are really out there doing it and living life, right? And then to hear someone else that I had as a guest mention them too, I'm like, I'm sold. I need to go buy some stuff. Yeah, it's just, it's cool, man, to kind of create that blanket network for sure too.
Yeah. And plus, you know, most, but, you know, like with traditional, I find, you know, it's all handmade stuff, whoever it is, you know, from American, Canadian, I don't really care. Mm-hmm. I just want to support like someone who is like making something for their, to support their family, like a family owned business, or someone who just makes something like because they really love it with their hands. And, you know, I'm not going to say the Far East C word or anything like that. I don't want to, I'm not down with that. I'm down with supporting, whether you're from, you know, New York State, whether you're from like BC, I don't really care. If you're making something to support your family, you're a small business, I am down with that. And I try to incorporate buying that to make our stuff too. So it's just, I that's what I want to do. And, you know, talking to people like this, like yourself, who have these causes and have these like motivations to like really bring community together. And I think that's what more, when more people listen to that kind of stuff, the more it's infectious. It just spreads and it makes you realize how many people like us are out there too. How many people are like really good people that want to help other good people.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with that more. And I definitely feel like it's brought in like a sense of purpose I didn't expect. You know, I just thought it'd be fun to make a podcast and share some people's stories. And then, when things kind of unfolded and all that kind of spiraled or like snowballed, it was like, there's this just really big, exactly like you say, that sense of enjoyment from knowing just how many other people are out there, you know, sharing the same thing, sharing the same passions and trying to live their life to the fullest within the things that they're doing, whether it's making stuff to create a living for their family or getting out. And, you know, even if they're super tired from their normal 9-to-5 job and their everyday hustle and bustle, they're still for some reason hiking a mountain Sunday morning looking for sheep. You know, it's like, you know,
it's awesome.
Yeah, man, it's super cool.
What actually, now that the season's over, as of this recording for basically everyone, I mean, what would you say? I mean, this could just, it doesn't mean this season, but I do have a question for you about this season.
Okay.
What would you say, because you're in a place where a lot of things could happen, what would you say would be like the most unexpected thing that's happened out there in the bush, whether it's like a bizarre encounter or with an animal, or what has been the weirdest thing that's happened out there, like with a wildlife engagement or just a weird thing that happened in the bush for you?
So from this season, or I mean, I got, yeah.
Anytime. Yeah. What's the most bizarre thing that's happened to you out there?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a pinpoint one. I've had a few bizarre things. I can think of a couple that come straight off the top of my head, as soon as you asked. And, you know, like this season, like, yeah, opening day, shot a buck with my compound bow. And then after that, I was like, I'm going traditional for the remainder, like, of the 3 months. I had pretty much the biggest lock I ever had on opening day. And I don't know if I'll ever, yeah, take a deer any bigger than the one that I shot on opening day this year.
Is this the velvet whitetail story?
Yeah, but we can get into that, but that's not the weirdest thing. It's pretty weird that, yeah, that's literally
we'll
the
follow
first
up with, deer we'll, that we'll I circle back to yeah. that one. But what's the weirdest
thing? So two things kind of when, and this is just maybe a preliminary return to recurve and longbow traditional hunting that maybe took me off guard or surprised me. So one is an experience. The other is just, you know, I started to get a lot more intel of the property that I'm hunting on and just understand. I've seen more stuff with hunting with traditional than I ever have with anything. With rifle or compound. And this is really the first year that I've returned back like full-fledged, like committed. Like I had $7 at the end of this year that walked away. And it was a really hard pill to swallow, but I knew getting back into it, like, and hearing you guys talk and the inspiration I get from hearing you guys talk about it too, it's like, man, that's going to happen. You have to be okay with failure. Like, you have to accept the fair chase, and there's going to be more that walks away from you than any other form of hunting. Right.
Totally.
But I also didn't expect that even though there was that many that walked away, that was still more opportunity than I've had that I almost created through trying to be a better hunter through traditional than any other form. I was on the ground moving around a lot more. I wasn't up in a stand and so that in a sense was really weird to me that I thought that traditional, I wouldn't be seeing as much or I'd be spooking more or whatever. And don't get me wrong. There still wasn't the success of a harvest, but there was, in my opinion, still a high feeling of success for, just having those encounters and that understanding of the property that I was hunting on and everything like that. And then it's really weird with that I was talking about recently too on my podcast, but it's, I had this back. And so I had someone trying to help me out. And this was actually Jeff Dorward there too, because through the podcast, we've become friends and talking to each other and this kind of same stuff. And he goes, yeah, man, like set up, like a Montana decoy, like a doe decoy in a place that you think they're traveling through. Once the rut hits, give them the rattles and the grunts and the doe bleats and, do a sequence of calling and try to get some deer in and whatever. Right. And I was like, that's a really good piece of advice. I like that kind of option of like a ground ambush with the trad bow, and it was working really good for encounters. I was getting a good number of encounters each time I went out, but again, nothing that followed through. I took one shot on a buck that I missed, and again, that's, we can get into that whatever later, but this one morning it's like pitch black. I'm going out probably 2 hours before legal light. Just wanted to get out in the as dark as I can. I don't like using a light. I like letting my eyes adjust even in the thick bush. Like, I don't like having a red light or anything. It's a personal preference. I just want to immerse myself in whatever in the darkness, if that's what it is.
Yep.
So I go out in the pitch black, and at this point I'm walking like a field edge into like right next to a bush that I hunt in quite a bit. I didn't hunt field edge very often. I don't like hunting open field edge with archery stuff because I just don't like seeing things 60 yards away and then that's it, but anyway, so I was walking in on a field edge. I go and I plant this doe decoy down, and as soon as I lift my head, the same way that I walked in to this property and like walked into where I was getting set up, a buck had walked right behind me pretty much what seemed like probably the whole way. Like, and that's the last thing you'd expect, right? It's super weird. It's like you would think like, oh, they smell the rubber on the boots or whatever, and they're not gonna, they're not gonna follow you into a spot. So planted this decoy, I like lift my head, and this buck is just probably 60 yards in the middle of the field, right down the kind of trail of the field I was walking in on, and he's just staring at me. And he kind of wheezes at me. And at this point I had like a grunt tube in my hand. And so on the top of my grunt tube, it's got the two holes for like wheezing, right? So I'm thinking like, hey, if I see him as a shadowy figure, he sees me as, I just don't want to blow the fact that I'm a human. I'm like, hey, if he thinks I'm a deer or whatever, I was like, I'm just going to pretend to be a deer. So I just wheeze back at him. And then we got in this, like, this piped up argument. Like, he starts snorting at me. I start grunting at him. He starts wheezing. And so this whole time I'm like, I don't know what this guy thinks I am. Like, he could probably see the doe decoy and it was like, looks like a deer. And I'm kind of like some Homo sapien walking deer, I guess. I'm trying to like run back to the bush. So as I'm like wheezing at him, I run back into the trees, and this just goes on for probably like, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes, where he's pacing like back and forth in the field opening, like from bush line to bush line, just like almost like trying to start a fight going back and forth. I ran to the bush because I was like, man, this guy could just charge me and I'd be that statistic of a guy getting gorged or something. So I just went and hid in the bush and started grunting at it. And I didn't want to blow the hunt and him, you know, get freaked out. So I tried to just keep challenging him, and he started running through the bush, like, and just kind of started spazzing out and just grunting and wheezing and all this stuff. And then, yeah, he eventually calmed down and went away. And of course, after a really loud and explosive moment like that, you're thinking like, well, I probably won't see anything for the rest of the day. And then sure enough, about 45 minutes into legal light, I had another buck that came in, and I don't think it was the same one, but yeah, it was just, when you're talking about a weird experience, man, like, and that would have not happened had I probably not gone into traditional, I don't know, maybe it would have, I don't know. It's just, there's a lot of things that brought me to that one moment this year, and I couldn't help but just laugh that this thing was like ready to fight me, basically. And I was just trying to not
stand off with the buck.
Yeah, I was just trying to not be awesome, a human. Right? Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, super cool. And, you know, it's cool when I've talked about it in the past too. It's just, there's nothing else where you participate in the wilderness like that. You know, like, you're an active participant. It's like anything else, you're really kind of like an observer or like a witness to it, right? Where in this instance, like, he's in full rut mode, like ready to, you know, basically crash antlers with any other buck and challenge any other buck over some does or something like that. And he's in his full state, like aggressive time of year. And yeah, I'm just sitting there getting aggressive with him back to hopefully not blow my cover as a human or whatever. But yeah, it was really funny and really kind of unique and really weird. I did not expect that happening. It was weird for the way that he came in. It was weird for the whole interaction. And then weird that there is still another buck that came in after. There's just no science to this, right? Like, if there was a perfect math equation to hunting or traditional bow hunting or anything, I don't even know if people would do it, because you would just, yeah, two and two and you're out there and you get the job done, right? And there's just so much unique occurrence that can happen that it just, yeah, makes it worth going out every time, right? But
oh, 100%, yeah. Man, case in point,
yeah. But that's the weirdest, that's awesome, for sure, lately that I can think of. But yeah,
well, circling back to what we were just talking before, that's a weird one. Thanks for sharing the weird.
I hope it was good.
Your Instagram post. Yeah, your Instagram post got me really hyped up to hear this story, the velvet buck story. I mean, obviously, bush stories, we got to bring the stories. And yeah. I would say I was really intrigued with hearing more about this.
Yeah, so I don't know where to kind of start the story with, because I was more excited for this year than probably, and I mean, every year I think we all get stoked. I don't know, you know, it's, you're getting up there. And I know maybe for yourself as well, having people on as guests talking about it prior to hunting season, like, to me, that really like fueled that stoked that flame, right? To get out there, just talking to people, hearing these stories prior to hunting season, hearing what everybody else is going to get up to, what are your plans this year, where are you going, whatever. So I was getting really stoked. And then, yeah, the day, like, opening day came around this year for bow season in the bow zone here was September 1st. For what I was going for, I wasn't going for like the, I think, opener elk and opener sheep. You get into like August 25th, you get kind of like a week early. But yeah, I was starting this year on September 1st. And I remember I was having a conversation in the afternoon. So with it being a Friday, I wasn't sitting the morning. I wasn't sitting the afternoon. I was sitting pretty much just the evening hunt. Again, not really a lot of activity for things, it seems, opening day, other than, you know, I don't know. There's not a lot of hunting pressure yet. But I think something valid to maybe enter into the story at this point, too, is I stopped running trail cameras. And it's the same thing like when I was mentioning with the traditional stuff, all the encounters and stuff. Like, I was getting more intel from the land this year, traditional hunting, than I ever did with a little window into the woods through a trail camera. Not that they're a bad thing or I don't agree with them or anything like that. And I think they serve their purpose when you use them as a tool 100%. But I knew it was for what I thought was in the general area of where I was hunting from years prior using cameras and stuff like that. And just sightings and other things from our bull moose that we have around and the bucks that we have that were coming around. And I chalked it up. Like, even if you listen to the episodes prior to this happening, I was like, yeah, you know, we get some okay deer and, you know, it's nothing crazy or whatever, right? And then I just stopped running cameras because I just wanted to have this, like, almost like the element of surprise. I personally don't run them just because I don't check them during the hunting season. I don't like knowing when things are there when I'm not. It's like, okay, it's almost like disappoints me or discourages me to just like see a big buck and I have no business around it at all that time of day or something, you know? Yeah. I mean, I got lots of tracks, lots of sign, you know, and lots of stuff in the area. So stopped running cameras. And I was talking to a friend, Luke Squires, there in the afternoon. And I remember saying to him, like, you know, I just, whether it's a doe or a buck with my general tag this year for general archery here, I just wanted to take pretty much the first thing that came by. And, you know, I wanted to go back into processing and eating. Like, we always practice shooting our bows tons. We practice, you know, tuning everything in, building our arrows, everything like that. But it's a lot more seldom that you're practicing, you know, harvesting, butchering, cutting, quartering, you know, gutting, like all of these other things, right? So I was just right. Like, you know, we have a lot of opportunity. So to kind of also add this into the story, for tags in the zone that I primarily hunt, which is more like inland from the Rockies and stuff, it's more of kind of like a prairie area. But where I primarily hunt, I can take a general whitetail buck and then a general moose with archery. And then the Strathcona zone that I'm in allows for three more does or two does and a buck. So there's like this Strathcona primitive hunt. So that's like five big game animals. And then there's general mule deer. And yeah, I think there's another couple supplemental doe tags you can take. It rounds out to somewhere being like eight or nine big game animals. Crazy. With a bow. And yeah, it's nuts. I've never even wanted to attempt taking that much in a year, but there's plenty of opportunity. So I just thought, you know, all that being said, the first thing that gives me a shot opportunity, I'm taking, so I can fill the freezer, you know, classic kind of sentences of I just want to fill the freezer or whatever. And just kind of go through the repetitions of practicing the back I don't know, like the back end of stuff, if you will, like the cutting, the gutting and the butchering and processing stuff. So that's basically what me and my buddy were having this conversation. And it's so funny because we talk about the conversation we had afterward, but, you know, it's just this, you know, I'm going to get out for a couple hours. It's opening day. You got to kind of get out and sit and do whatever and enjoy it, kind of ring in the year. And then, this is kind of a funny moment too. So I got there, get out to my stand, and I'm like still hunting at this buck was taken from like a tree stand. So I'm going out to my tree stand setup that I have, and I go there like as quiet as possible, still hunting there as best as I can. And then I get a text from my wife and she's like, "Hey, I think my car keys are in your truck."
Oh, gee. Oh,
so I leave. Yeah. So I quietly get out of the bush opening day, go all the way back home, drop off the keys. And I mean, I'm very lucky that this hunting spot is like 10 minutes from my house in kind of a little bit of country here. So it's yeah, a really lucky Bozeman city limits area to be archery hunting and having this kind of quality of species around and animal size and stuff. But anyway, so go there, come back, go there, come back, whatever. Still hunt back in, get up into the stand, and in my tree stand, I just have like, yeah, the bow hanger just to the left of me. And,
yep,
you know, it's starting to get to, I think at that point, legal light, I think was like 852 or something like that. And then sunset was, I don't know, 830 or something, 829. So right around like 745, 8 o'clock here, I was thinking like, okay, this is kind of like that golden hour, right? Things are moving around. And I remember just thinking to myself, you know, it would be nice to see anything, whether there was an opportunity or not, just to know like, okay, I didn't set up any cameras this year, right? Like I didn't check anything. I'm just hoping. And it also kept me out of the bush. Like this game trail that I set up on quite a bit. When I did run cameras, I was there all the time checking cameras, right? So I just wanted to like let the wild do what it does and then just one day show up there. Like I didn't want to be going in and out all throughout the year, checking stuff, whatever. I went out once in the summer to shoot my bow from the stand, just to make sure I'm like, you know, it was good. And also check my stand and make sure it wasn't stolen or rusted or whatever. Right. Anyway, so there was that, and I'm trying to think, I don't want to go on too much of a tangent with it, but yeah, I remember, yeah, just thinking to myself, I was hoping to see pretty much anything at that point. And I remember throughout the day prior to that, I was seeing a lot of other people's success. And this is also something that comes up in podcasts quite a bit and everything with social media and technology and stuff. And I think it's something that affects us all is, you know, you see other people's success and sometimes, you know, you're like, oh, why am I never the one that catches the big fish or has the big buck or has this and that? Like, you know, I got to go to work, and it's so easy to get down on yourself. And it's so easy to be like, yeah, you know, this didn't pan out, or, you know, I kind of woe is me, or, you know, kind of have a pity party. And I don't mean that like rude. It's like, I've been in that, been like, man, you know? And so I was seeing posts from other people and I just mentally was like reminding myself, like, and this is something that I try to foster now. And then maybe that's the wrong word, cause I'm not trying to sound like, you know, the leader of anything, but it's just, you know, I tried to, in that unit that I'm hunting and the people that I know that hunt around that area and the people that I'm talking to through the podcast and stuff, I tried to keep things as supportive as possible, right? Like within the hunting community, we know that, you know, it's kind of under fire all the time through society, right? So we can't really be hating on each other and disagreeing. Oh, you did it this way. Oh, you used a trail camera. That's not right. Or, you know, it's, everyone's got six ways from Sunday that things should be done or shouldn't. And it's, we can argue and split hairs over all of this kind of stuff. That is in the ethical argument, maybe more so than obviously a legal one. But again, yeah, not to get too sidetracked, but it's just seeing a lot of other people having opening day success. And I was like, man, I got to separate myself from that and just be happy for them and be like, dude, that is unreal. I remember we had a couple guys here, like Tanner Ferguson from the Cutthroat Cowboys in Alberta here. They're hilarious guys, great fly fishermen and amazing hunters. And they shot a couple does on opening day. And I was like, man, that's unreal. Like, you know, seeing their posts in the afternoon, they were out in the morning on opening day taking does. And I was like, awesome, like stoked to see. But again, I need to separate myself from their success and not get down on myself, right? So again, 7:45 ish, something like that, I was just thinking, you know, it'd be nice to just see a deer or something come by. And sure enough, probably about at this time too, like none of the leaves had fallen off the trees, like, yeah, everything's in full velvet. So for, I could only see, like, where I hunt there's pretty thick bush and I could only see maybe 50 yards. So right around the 50 yard mark, like farthest I could see just from this tree trunk, I just seen the flicker of like a whitetail kind of flick out, right? And immediately I was like, oh, a deer, like this is awesome, right? It's just anytime, right, you get the opportunity to see something, even you're just, this is why we're out here, right? So I was just stoked. And it's sniffing the ground, walking down this one trail, and at this point he's walking directly towards me. And as he's sniffing the ground, I see his antlers and I'm like, oh, like it's a buck, right? I'm like, right on, even better, right? Because like I said earlier, talking to Buddy, like, you know, I was just going to take whatever. And he starts picking his head up and sniffing in the air. And as he does that, he kind of, that's when he flashes this like crown, right? Like he just turns to the side. And that's when I first got this like full window. Doesn't matter when I ran trail cameras, never seen this deer, you know, like this. And I didn't even know this caliber existed anywhere close to where I was hunting of buck, right? Like I was like biggest deer I've ever even laid eyes on, you know, outside of the internet.
Yeah.
But like in person. And yeah, so immediately like my heart blows through my chest. And at this point, still my bow's hanging on my tree. I'm leaning up against my tree and I've got no business trying to grab my bow and come to a full draw. I don't have a shot opportunity or anything. And I'm just at this point praying that, you know, it kind of walks the path that it's taking. So at this point, there was three paths that he could have taken with like least restriction. And one was basically directly at me. And then two of them would have been more broadside shots at a little bit farther distances, probably about 30 to 40 yards or so. And as he came in, he kind of debated back and forth where he wanted to go. And then sure enough, he just started walking straight towards me. And at one point he stops and sniffing around, looks directly at me, and we just make full blown eye contact. And this is something I like to talk about quite a bit with other guys like yourself, is just like, what's your experiences with, you know, once things are like sub 30 yards and they're looking at you and they're aware of your presence and there's this like miniature relationship built really quick or whatever. But yeah, so he's probably at this point that we make eye contact, probably right around like the 30 yard mark, still coming like frontal towards me. And everybody knows like frontal out of a tree stand is not like a great shot opportunity. I'm basically looking at antlers. Like I don't have a shot at all. Right.
Yeah.
And where I'm kind of set up to try to paint a picture a bit, it's like, we're coming out of thick bush right into a little bit of a clearing. So, and that's just because these are really the only bigger trees that I could set a stand up in. Everything else is like small, skinny, like birch trees and stuff. Right. So, he's coming into, yeah, right into like the more open clearing. And at this point between him and I, there's like one tree between both of us. And, as he gets pretty much behind that tree, he starts kind of turning broadside right in front of me. And yeah, at this point now he's like 15 yards and I'm like almost panicking because I'm not even holding my bow yet. Like I'm still just looking at this thing. And he starts to go behind the one tree between him and I. And the minute that his head went behind that tree, I immediately had my bow unhooked and drawn. And it's so funny because in the heat of the moment, people will always talk about like, oh, I don't remember drawing my bow back, or I don't remember this and that, or whatever, right? I don't remember the weight of the bow. I don't remember, you know, the physical motions. I just remember like ripping that thing off the tree and like this is... So it was the one kind of shot I had to make a rush, big movement. So I took that opportunity, made the big movement. I'm sitting there at full draw and I just see his head start coming through the tree, like basically perfectly broadside. He worked it, pretty much walked into the perfect shot or shooting lane for myself. So as his face started coming through, I was looking through my sight and I just had my pin hover over his face. Slowly went down to his neck. It felt like an eternity, but I just remember in my head at this point, lots of times in the past, with anything that I've taken a shot at with a bow, I don't pay attention to the shot cycle the same way that I do when I'm target shooting, right? So I made like a really mental note to be like controlling my breath, calming down my heart rate, and really being aware of where my anchor point was and where my shot cycle was at. And like, I really slowed things down at that point. And I think that was really helpful in this moment. And just took kind of like a quick check and been like, yeah, this is exactly how I'm set up when I'm shooting a target, like regardless that it's 15 yards, you can blow it. Right. So anyway, the pin kind of went, yeah, over his face, down his neck to the shoulder. And as soon as it met that crease of the shoulder, yeah, just squeezed and let the arrow fly. And it was really funny, just full pass through. So I immediately seen the arrow sticking out of the ground, and it's really funny. So there's this archery shop here, C&D Archery, and they're again just supporters of the podcast and really, really, really nice guys, Corey and Doug here. And I ordered a rest through them, and they sent me out these arrow wraps. I know this is funny because I don't do video, but I could show you what these arrow wraps look like. But I'm not used to this, but they sent these like bright orange arrow wraps, right?
Yeah, those look sick.
And and it's got the C&D logo on the side and everything. And they just kind of sent it as a thank you. And this was a week before hunting season. And I just like rebuilt my arrows. I put on new vanes. I put on like a new offset. And yeah, it's pretty much everything you don't want to be doing in the last week before hunting season. And that's what I was screwing around with for some reason. I'm blaming it on them because they sent these and I wanted to use them. And so, but so got these orange wraps set up. And as soon as I made them, people were like, oh, you'll see those really well. And I didn't even think about that. Like, yeah, it's going to stick out like an Illuminok or something. And sure enough, as soon as the arrow passed through the steer, it's sticking out of the ground, right? So the deer kind of stops. I think it's like, I don't even really know if it knew that it got hit. It just was more like reactionary to the sound of the bow going off and like the slap of the string. And yeah, he kind of stepped forward and gave like a bit of a wheeze and looked around. And at this time, there was another buck probably about 20 yards behind him that I wasn't even aware that was there. And he started like grunting and he jetted, like he bolted. And I was like, okay, I got to pay attention to the buck that I shot. Well, this one's making all this ruckus running down the trees. And I didn't, again, like I said, until I shot this buck, I didn't even know the other one was there. And so the one that I did shoot, I call him Forks and Knives. He just took a few steps forward, kind of like had this weird hop, and then just started running between some like willow bushes and stuff. And I could just see probably about 20 to 30 yards from me, I could just see his tail poking up and his antlers just over top of this bush. And you could see him doing like the sway back and forth. Wow. And at this time, I'm looking at my arrow sticking out of the ground. And because of the way he acted, I was like, did I just straight up miss? Like, I thought like, there's a potential chance that I just totally missed this buck. I mean, there's that distinctive noise. I'm pretty sure I heard the noise. Immediately you start second guessing yourself, right?
Yeah.
And it's so easy to do that hunting. And then, see his antlers and his tail doing the wobble. And then he pretty much what looks like crashes for as far as I could see, given the foliage and everything too, right? So I'm sitting here like pretty much freaking out, calming down, just the adrenaline dump of everything. And I'm like, okay, well, obviously anytime with archery, I wanted to give this deer some time, not trying to go running up there to see if everything worked out or whatever. But I was like, I can't even make a phone call right now. Like I was like, I'm not even going to call my wife and tell her what happened. Like I was like, I need to know if I actually just hit that deer. Cause I was starting to second guess everything. And I was like, I need to check that arrow. So went down got out of the tree stand there and just really slowly was walking towards my arrow. And at that time, the other buck still probably wasn't too far away. And he gave another wheeze. And I'm like, man, like I really don't want him to cause, the buck that I shot to get up and run again or anything like that if he bedded down. Yeah. So I'm just trying to be really quiet, but also really wanted to see what was going on with the arrow, and walked up, ran my hand down the arrow, and sure enough, just absolutely soaked in blood. And I was like, oh my God, like this is... So quietly backed out of the bush, called my wife. I was just losing it. Like this, everyone's got the like first person that they're kind of calling when a situation goes down. And this property that I hunt off of, it's like my in-laws own property. And then it goes on to like a lease section of more kind of public area. And so I was basically just doing the little 10-minute run to my father-in-law's garage. And basically just blew open the garage door and just started screaming. I was just like, man, I'm like, I just shot the biggest deer I think I'll ever shoot in my life. Like just freaking out, right? And next door to us, across the street, we have this, he's a farmer there and his name's Sid. And super, super, super nice guy. Just the type of guy that would give you the shirt off his back. help out a family friend or anybody in need ever. And he's a big time hunter. Like, he's hunted Africa. He's hunted like all over North America. He's been on all the species you can name and imagine and whatever. Right. He used to work for the Conservation Association and stuff. Like, he's, his whole life, he's been a part of it. Right. So I call him and I'm like, Sid, I'm like, man, he's like, did you shoot a moose? He's like, do I need to drive a tractor out there? You know, what do we got to do? And I was like, no, man. I was like, I think I just shot the biggest buck I've ever seen. And he's like, I'll tell you, you know, he's like, whatever, kid, you know, he's just like, I'll tell you if it's a big deer or whatever. So he's like, if, and I'm like, man, I'm like, you don't need to come out here. I was just trying to call you and tell you, you know, like, this is what happened. And he's like, no, I'm putting my boots on. He's like, I'm coming over there. Awesome. So I'm sitting there, same thing. At this point, we're just giving the deer some time. And yeah, he rolls into the driveway. He comes up, we get some headlamps on. And I said to him, I'm like, man, it's been, you know, about 45 minutes. I was like, do you think we should go out there? I was going to give it about an hour. Do you want to wait 15 minutes, whatever? He's like, no, let's just go. And, you know, if we start to get close to something and he jumps up, like, you know, then we'll back out again or whatever. It's just kind of like, you know, let's just kind of go assess the situation. And I'm just piped up. Like, I'm so excited at this point. So we go down into the bush where my tree stand was, show him, like, yeah, this is where the arrow is, immediately. Like, this is honestly, man, it was best case scenario. Like, everything about it was exactly the way you hope it goes. And it's, that's never happened like this really for me. There's always been like, oh, a little bit of blood here, a little bit of blood there, I think it went this way. You know, this was the one that was just like, there, you know, he's okay, this is where the arrow is, here's the blood trail. Sid's like walking down the blood trail and I'm already like 10 feet in front of him. I'm like, man, it's up here. Like, it's going to be behind this bush laying down where I seen it teetering and tottering. Right. So I'm just like 10 steps ahead of him, a little bit of a rush because I'm so damn excited. And yeah, we come around the corner and this is actually funny. And I want to say this to you. So he's got this bigger flashlight on him. And as he turns, I know for sure he saw the buck first, but the way, this is just a testament to this dude and his just ethics or whatever, but he just turns back at me and he goes, okay, like when we come around here, he's like, let's just do a perimeter scan to, like, you know, that's the blood trail, but he's like, let's just make sure, you know? And I'm like, dude, I know. I like, I run up there and I turn and I look and sure enough, there it is, just laying. Right. And I look at him and I'm like, holy cow, man. Right. So we do the slow approach and, you know, make sure it's, yeah, dead. And yeah, it was phenomenal to see. So with that buck, for anyone that maybe hasn't seen a picture or anything, it's the one side is just a great 4-point with really tall tines. The other side has two main beams and then one like abnormal, some could call it a third beam, or just an insanely weird wide tall vertical brow tine. And on that right side, the like non-typical side with the two main beams and this weird brow tine, there's one tine that kind of forks apart and almost looks like a mule deer antler, like just the way that it kind of forks. And then another one comes up and has a couple nubs of antler and bone kind of coming off the side, a lot of character. And I didn't even notice that about the back when it first walked in. Like, I didn't see it and go, oh, it's got two main beams and it's a, you know, 12 point non-typical buck. I just was, this thing's huge, it's coming in, I'm gonna hate myself if I miss the shot. So I just went into hyper focus mode, not out of really strategy, just out of, I guess, reaction to the moment. I wasn't trying to count points or study it too much for how big it was or what it would score. I just, this is, like I said to Buddy in the afternoon, that's the first deer that came by, and that just happened to be the first deer that came by. It was just a gift from the man upstairs, right, as a lot of people would say. But yeah, and you know, it was funny to have Sid, this dude that's hunted his whole life, and then he looks at me and he just kind of, he goes, he's like, yeah, he's like, that's a cranker, you know. I was like, I got my affirmation from him that, yeah,
just like approval. It's awesome.
Yeah. I was like, this is a big buck, dude. And then yeah, so you know, we gutted it there, we dragged it out. And he was like, yeah, man, he's like, let's bring it. He's got a nice shed that we can luckily, you know, hang something up in and take our time and skin something and you know, enjoy the process. We didn't, you know, when I talked to him on the phone that night, I'm like, man, I'm ready to quarter this thing out in the field or take it up to our shop or whatever, like just deal with it myself. I'm not too concerned. And, you know, he's like, kind of let's celebrate it. Let's hang out and, you know, revel in it and let's bring it across the street to my place or whatever. But before we did that, you know, went up to the father-in-law's house and yeah, had him come out and check out this deer. And, you know, just the reaction of like, this deer was in my backyard. You know what I mean? Like literally like 10 minutes from like the capital of Alberta, like just outside of a huge city, you know? Yeah. Just really, really wild. And, yeah, really awesome experience. Even afterwards, just taking our time scanning it and just living in that moment. And then sure enough, I go out on the driveway and I call my buddy Luke back there. And, yeah, went from the conversation of I'll just take anything to he had obviously seen I shared a picture and a story on Instagram of just the buck laying there. And that's pretty much it. Like I didn't have a lot of time to say much or do much. I wanted to deal with the task at hand, but he obviously knew what happened and the caliber of what happened. And I think we just both screamed at each other for like an hour of just sheer excitement. And you know, he was like, I was walking around my neighborhood and people probably thought I was just, you know, freaking out on the phone or something. And I'm sitting on this driveway just like, I can't believe what just happened. But yeah, it was probably the most unforgettable. I mean, you don't really forget any, that's for sure. But yeah, it just to have everything align that way, right? I think like that's what we all aim for, right? Is an ethical, you know, runs 20, 30 yards, falls over, doesn't even really know what shot, you know, it's not stressed out and spooked. And, you know, to just feel that accomplishment of like, you know, I dealt this animal an ethical death and, you know, it's, he's going to feed my family and I'll honor it that way. And I'll, you know, pay homage to him that way. It's just, there's a lot of connecting that happened like that evening between that buck and everything. And this was also the first year I took with my 3-year-old son and stuff too, that he got to see. So I brought the cape home. Like I 100% went straight through Precision Edge Taxidermy. That's another guy, just to drop another name. He's Hunter Friesen here in Alberta. Again, another dude that's just really big supporter of the podcast. A really, really nice guy, a supporter of the Alberta community in general. I actually got his lid on right now, but, yeah, I drove it to him. I'm like, man, it was funny because when him and I first started talking, I was like, I don't know when I'm ever going to meet Hunter. Like, I was like, I don't know when I'm ever going to shoot something big enough that I'm going to get it shoulder mounted or like really go that route. Right. Yeah. And then, yeah, it was literally like that weekend. And it was funny. So he took a beautiful buck Saturday, the second day of open season. And then like the third day, him and I were standing side by side at his taxidermy shop holding our like basically opening weekend deer. And I was like, man, this is surreal, right? Like it was just unreal.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So took him to get that. But again, to kind of sidetrack, but I took the cape and the head to my son and I showed him. I wish I got to show him the whole deer. It was just that it, you know, happened in the last hour and then the harvesting all happened at nighttime and stuff. So he was in bed, but the next day to just show him even the cape and the head, I was really wondering how he was going to react. And I pulled it out of my truck and he was like, unforgettable. Just these words. He goes, oh, his daddy shot a big one. And
that's amazing.
Well, yeah, that approval from a 3-year-old was better than probably anything else. And it's just funny because when we were talking earlier about, you know, not growing up a lot with it, it's something I really wanted to facilitate for my son was, you know, home cooked meals that we worked for ourselves and provided for ourselves when we can. And we don't obviously for every meal, but yeah. And for him to like understand that that was a living animal, like, you know, it's like I watched all those things kind of flick in his brain for as much as you can understand at that age. You know, he understood that it was a life, like that was a deer that was shot and that dad had gone out and got it. And then, you know, when we sit down and eat dinner and we eat this deer, like, and I'll bring it up, I'll be like, oh, this is like, we're eating deer. And he'll be like, oh, the deer you shot. Right. And it's like, I don't want him to always just, oh, you shot this. You shot, like, you know, I'm not for it to sound like rude or anything like that. It's more so that it's like he's just has this awareness of like, that's where our meat came from. Because I would say 90% of meat that I've eaten in my life, I had no idea who butchered it, where it came from, or how it was procured, right? So just to see him make those connections, it's like, man, I didn't make those connections till I was like 20. And this guy's making these connections at like 3, right? So yeah, it's just nice to try to facilitate that. But that's that story, man. Sorry, I don't know if I just like
went on a
whole long.
Aaron, yeah. Holy geez, man. That's epic. I don't even know what to say. That's just insane, man. Like picture perfect, right down to your son's reaction. Like yeah, everything man. You could ever want from the hunt. Hang up your bow, buddy. How could you top it?
Yeah. Dude, that's like, I think that was one person because the picture started kind of circulating online. But, oh, can I share it? Whatever. And I think I read one comment and one guy was like, with a bow, opening day in full velvet, you know, for the size that it was, like it's a Pope and Young, you know, it's, and I'm not one out there counting score and eating the numbers or whatever, right? But yeah, right now the taxidermist hunter, they roughed it at like 185. And I was like, man, like as soon as I get it back, it's getting like pro scored. And, you know, it's one that I would get the little Pope and Young plaque and put it next to it just for, you know, everything that it meant for that deer, right? It's not something I would just go and try to do for every deer and not trying to show it off in that way. It's more to honor the life and the caliber of the species and what it is, right? But
yeah, that's amazing, man. Dude, like your perspective and your point of view is, I hope whoever's listening could really like really respect what you're saying, because that's the essence of what, you know, bow hunting and hunting. I don't want to just like leave it out for anything, but that's the essence of it, man. You just summed it up. That's the essence right there. I love it. That's
I really
incredible.
Appreciate that. That really means a lot, especially from you, Ron, because I know you guys, this is something I would say I really feel from the traditional community, is that a lot of people are out there doing it with a lot of purpose and morale. And it's not to say that, you know, in the hunting community in general, there isn't, it's just, you know, and like, that's why I hung up the compound. But when you're like, yeah, hang up the bow and go when you did it, right? It's like, that's why I was like, you know what? Right into the trad bow, like I am, like right back into, you know, because yeah, it's, I don't know, there is something there, and I don't want to say that not everybody has the same desire or purpose or insight into hunting that way at all, but I do really feel it within the traditional community. Like if people are going to go out there and try to do it the most kind of difficult, I would say, an organic way of, like, you know, building self bows or things like this, or like you say, like all pretty much built from hand, like the tabs that you make and the things that you're making, Ron, like you're building from hand. That's what I love about traditional bow tuning. I'm not going to the shop to be like, oh, I need a new rest. I'm like cutting some hair and making a rest myself, you know. It's like, I love that about traditional archery, that it's a lot more self-reliant. And when you're experiencing the outdoors with that self-reliance and that intonation to nature, it just, I don't know. It, to me, that's like the whole reason I go out with anything, whether it's a rifle or compound bow, a traditional bow or anything, it's for that same fundamental reason of connecting to the world we live in and the human experience and just kind of the grand picture and that same kind of rabbit hole thing that we were talking about earlier. But yeah, it's something I really get, and especially listening to you and the guys you talk to and yeah, the guys and girls you talk to throughout the hunting community. And it's something I just love hearing through the Bush Stories pod too, is just that, exactly like you say, just the reason why people do it. And yeah, just everything, all the meaning behind it, right? It's really impactful.
Yeah,
changed my life.
If it feels that right, then it must be in alignment to what we really are supposed to be doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of hard to say, like, it's not, hunting's not for everyone, but like, you know, when you connect that deeply and it's all in such a flow, like how it happened to you, not just you, but to others, mm-hmm. and it just feels so right and natural, then, you know, those are the things that I think personally we should be leaning more into instead of like, you know, the digital world where it just feels so, it doesn't quite feel right. You know, mm-hmm. although you kind of have to in this day and age, you have, I don't want to say have to, but you know, you feel compelled to have to do the posts, the all this crap.
Yeah,
it really
man.
Is meaningless in a sense. But when you do these things that are so meaningful, you mm-hmm. really, you got to lean more into those things. Cause those, I think those are the things that our spirit is telling us are what's truly right.
Yeah. I really appreciate that perspective. I really like that perspective towards it all, especially because, again, with that, with technologies constantly, kind of bombarding us in a certain way, or like you said, like the feeling, like the need to post or share certain things or fall into the algorithm of, you know, people seeing what you're doing or whatever, you know, it's a really weird thing to get caught up in. And, you know, it's funny because like taking that back and everything, like at that point when everything connected and everything felt right, like I was really open to the experience. Like I just wanted to, you know, go through the system or like the process again. And it's something that's really connected me. I guess the best way I could put it is like to the circle of life. I maybe like the way I can best think about it is like, as if there, it was like incomplete. And once I started to like harvest an animal and provide, and especially because at that point it's a very noticeable life, you know, like when you said hunting isn't for everybody, like that's for sure. But you know, if I got a buddy that really enjoys eating steak and he's not going to hunt, I mean, it's like, that's fine, man. You know, like, and it's funny, I've heard the term, and I don't know if you've heard it, I can't remember who I heard say it, but it's like a contract killer. It's like guys that don't hunt, but eat meat. They're just like contract. They're yeah. contracting someone else to do it for them or whatever. Right. Anyway, but, and it's what, you know, it's not for everybody, but I feel like it is something that, when we were talking about connection to food and stuff, that I was like, yeah, without being a part of that process. And, you know, I say this a lot too, is like, I always pictured it as like, you know, there's this number that I'm unaware of. Like, I don't know how many chickens have died for me to enjoy chicken wings and breasts and whatever. Right. I don't know how many cattle have died for me to enjoy like Alberta AAA Angus beef, you know, like, you know, it's, there's a lot of truly life that has ended in order for mine to continue. And I don't know that number. Right. And it's very much a disconnect to that circle of life. Right. And then, you know, to at least just make some of those connections to some of those numbers, you know, when people are, there's always the argue like, oh, if you're vegan, you're still killing plants and whatever, right? Like you can go down and split hairs on anything, but just the idea of like when you're walking up to something that, yeah, like you've literally taken its life to then take that energy from its life to prolong your own and provide that healthy meal for your family. It's, there's so much jam packed into those moments in hunting. I just don't get through a lot of other things, like through skateboarding growing up, but you know, I've had a lot of things that I'm very passionate in life for, but it's just, when you're talking about the stuff that really resonates true to you, or really resonates with you, and that like you would, should lean into that like that, that's something for myself for sure, that, you know, kind of completing that circle of life and knowing like that's where it ended for mine to continue in this time frame. Yeah, it just provides a ton of meaning, and it just makes me lean into more of it, even through conversations like this and podcasts and stuff, to, I don't know, to put it out there that I think a lot of people do see it that way. And hunters aren't just people going out, you know, recklessly killing things that are on some bloodthirst to whatever. You know, there's a deep connection to conservation. There's a deep connection to the outdoors. There's a deep connection to the well-being of these animals and what they're doing and stuff. So, yeah. I don't know. Sorry to go off. I just go off on a tangent thinking about all that stuff.
But. I hear you, buddy. I hear you, man. That's it. That's it. And, you know, kind of to summarize it all, where do you see things going into the future now that obviously we've gotten past all the shit that's happened in the last couple of years? And, you know, not to go down rabbit holes, but where do you see things going? Like, do you see, it doesn't have to necessarily be trad, but in hunting in general, like, what's your thoughts on how things are moving into the future? And, you know, what's your thoughts about just the state of the world and where hunting fits into it?
That's a loaded question for sure.
kind of. We'll end it on a philosophical note.
Oh man, I'm sorry. I feel like it's so funny to be on the other end because I already feel like I talk too much in life, and now you're asking, and I'm like, oh, I'll just talk all the way because. Yeah, I'm a guest for once, and now I'm like, man, I don't shut up. But
no, it's all good, man.
Oh, man. It's just I don't want to crack open a can of worms in my brain, for lack of better words. I'm really passionate about psychology and human behavior and philosophy and, like I was saying, theology and where we came from and the great minds, like Marcus Aurelius and Meditations. And so, to go into the philosophy of things is one thing. There's a lot of people that sparked a lot of curiosity for what the future holds just in general for the world or anything. I think without a doubt, when you think about rifle hunting, in a sense, a lot of people out there, a part of, I think about it as when people were first settling throughout North America, you were just more successful to protect your family and to feed your family if you had a rifle, right, at that time. So when you look into the future of what could the world end up like, it's just, I don't think it's a bad thing to, be able to take care of your family and protect yourself in a way if for some reason all crap hit the fan. When you're thinking in the last 2 years and the kind of the travesties that are happening around the world from different wars and things like that, and not to get on too much of a big scale of, what's going on in the future, but I think, and not to sound like a doomsday prepper too much, but there's an element of these valuable life skills that can result in, I guess, self-sufficiency and to help just kind of take care of the people you love if, things went ultimately left. But now with all that being said, with, the way hunting's going or traditional hunting or bow hunting, it seems like there's a resurgence. And I think you guys have even talked about this with Bush Stories and stuff, that there seems to be, and even again, kind of another resurgence into more people in maybe the last 5 or 10 years getting a lot more into traditional archery and stuff like that again, too. And I think, I guess, to not get too crazy philosophical or something, is when we're talking about the way technology is going and how we've been kind of weaving in and out with the conversation of people kind of looking for things that really resonate with them more than, say, the boundaries and the confines of technology. I think people are kind of coming back to a lot of homesteading and survivalism type interests just through seeing the direction that the world's going. I don't know. I would love to see a world where people can govern themselves very well. People can look out for each other as a community, and people can take good care of one another and realize that, it does take a village, and it's not just one person that has all the answers or has the direction that people should go in. It's just as technology kind of moves forward, it seems like we're either going to get fully engulfed by the singularity with this technology, or it's an extreme the other way and we ditch it completely, or there's some sort of happy medium. I don't know. I get pretty worried. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about the future with, hunting or the general consensus, but I think a lot of people are moving into traditional hunting. I know that's myself for sure. In my 20s, I was like, oh, the state of the world's crazy. Cities are crazier than ever. Unfortunately, it feels like in Edmonton in the last, and I don't want to just spout, I love Edmonton and the city and everything, but it just feels like in the last few years, it's gotten to be a lot less of a safe place. So I think through that, people are starting to, like you were saying earlier, just go back to those kind of grassroots interests to, I don't know, rekindle that real and true kind of human experience again. But I don't know if that's a good answer. I don't know how to answer that.
No, I agree, man. I think it makes sense. I think for myself, I kind of just think a lot of what our destiny as you know, humans, where it's going is either going to, you know, people are getting little whispers in their intuition. And for me, like, I hear it. And, you know, like you said, homesteading, all of these things is a part of that whisper. And mm-hmm. either you listen to it and you move into it, or you disregard it as just like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I feel something, but you know what? I really should be, you know, downloading the next app and doing whatever. And like I said, mm-hmm. like you said, right, tech is good. It's like a stepping stone to elevate us higher, but mm-hmm. we should never allow it to imprison us and to contain us and destroy us.
Yeah, right? That's so a really good way to put it. Yeah,
that's just my perspective, but it kind of like bounces off what you're saying too. So, you know, I think mm-hmm. It's hard to answer, but I figured I'd throw it at you anyways.
yeah, man.
I knew with a little bit of philosophy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, something that we didn't bring, I didn't know, you know, like to really quickly touch on this maybe, or to bring it up. But when my wife and I first started dating, we moved out to British Columbia and we helped older couple build an Earthship. And I don't know if you're familiar with Earthships at all, but I like to bring it up every now and then. But they're like 100% self-sustainable home, off-grid, built out of like recycled materials. And Michael Reynolds, the guy that kind of came up with the idea, if you go in and do any sort of research, looking up pictures or anything like this, really incredible stuff. And the whole concept is that it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg to go out and do it. So we kind of cut our teeth in our relationship through building and helping other people, you know, creating, I don't know, more of a self-sustainable lifestyle. And then from that, we ended up building a tiny house, her and I, like one on a triple axle trailer. And we built that from scratch, and that took us a year and a half. And then we lived out of that for 2 years. And that was, I would say, like semi off grid, like we still had gridded power and everything. And then after we had our son, I mean, a lot of people live in tiny homes with their kids and live more outdoors, and I wish we could do that more, but we ended up selling our tiny house and then buying a house here. So it worked out really beneficial, but I didn't want to just go out spouting all this stuff, but it's just this, in the last decade for myself, there was this whole kind of resurgence to that same kind of homesteading lifestyle, whether it was the sustainability of your home or you know, your food source and your basically how you're taking care of your basic needs, right? And yeah, it seems like there's a lot of people starting to take that upon themselves. And I really like the way that you say, like, you get these kind of little kind of inklings of like, hey, like maybe check this out or look over here or something, you know. Well, and I don't want to get too philosophical or anything too, but where would you say that those come from? Like, who would you think is giving you those messages in a weird way?
It's deep. I don't know. It's hard to, it's a difficult
it is, yeah.
to really answer, because it's going to be either impossible for someone to understand my perspective, or they might get it. I don't know. There's certainly a grand energy, whatever everyone wants to call it. And I think we're cut from that cloth. You know, our spirit is cut from that cloth, mm-hmm. and that everything, all of our strengths as a race of people, of humans, comes from that energy. And whatever is out there right now that we want to move away from, we do it because we hear it and we know it's trying to destroy what makes us great. Mm-hmm. I don't believe personally that AI is better than us and never will be, because it will never have what we have. And that's essentially the infinite power to make whatever we want, to do anything. Mm-hmm. Through that little spark of what the universe is. So we'll always be vastly like beyond what it can ever achieve. It has mm-hmm. information, and it could perfect that information and all physical information, mm-hmm. but it could never transcend that physical barrier, which we are designed to do. And that's where all of these little, in my opinion, all of these things come from, all of these little gifts and, you know, our ability to grow internally all comes from that. So it's just I pay close attention to how it feels, and you know, I'm not saying I'm perfect. There are times when I disregard it, but the lesson I find is that the more I do listen to it, the more it gets easier and the more things flow more naturally. And when you're in that path, that's I think where we should all go, whatever that path calls to you. So everyone's got their own path, but just listen to what the voice is, and that's gonna it's going to benefit anyone ever anyways, right? So if you excel by following that path, it just benefits everyone. And that's how we all lift up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I love that. I absolutely love that perspective and that take.
And
I
think,
no way, man. I fully understand. And you know, it's funny because like within Alberta Wildlife Stories, I feel like there's this avenue of these types of conversations starting to come up quite a bit. And I don't know if I'm putting it out there a lot or if I'm kind of like asking people questions, like, cause you know, people are like, oh, don't talk about like politics and religion and this and that. Right. And that's just like, you know, in business or whatever. Right. But I feel like hunting really connects us to all of this stuff, right? Like it's connecting us to talking about technology. We're on technology, talking about the outdoors. We're inside across the country, talking about the outside. Right.
Well, it's technology that we're using as a tool rather than technology that's like caging us. So it's just that's we're the masters and that's where it should always be.
And I completely agree with that with AI. Like at first with AI, I was like, oh man, what if it becomes smarter than us and whatever does all this stuff? And I just thought, you know, like, I don't think that's, you know, it would ever get to a point where it's more capable than what created it. Right.
Well, the capability is maxed out on physical limitations and the physical observation of what it can perceive and digest around it, but it'll never be what we can be. It'll always aspire to be what it could be, and that's what it'll probably piss it off. Mm-hmm. It will always be infinitely beyond it, I think.
Yeah. Personally. Oh, I totally agree. And I love the analogy of all being cut from the same cloth within like the energy and life and stuff like that too, because you know, there's lots of different words. And when we were talking, like when I brought up like theology and stuff like that, like, you know, just going into the past, like, you know, I love reading about just different religions and stuff like that. Like, I like reading about, you know, how in the Bible, God talks about the ungulates and hunting. You know what I mean? It's like there, it's woven throughout all of theology. Mm-hmm. I also like in like Taoism, how we're constantly like, that would be like, you know, with the symbol of the yin and the like yin yang, right? And it's like one side is chaos and the other side is order. And you're constantly walking the line between chaos and order, understanding that without one, you couldn't have the other or whatever, right? Like you don't have good without the bad or anything like that. And again, not to get too philosophical, but I take a lot of passion in trying to figure out, I think the human experience, why we do the things we do and why we connect so deeply to these things. And it's awesome to have this conversation with you because it always just like kind of reinstills that I'm not the only person like feeling this way outdoors when, you know, experiencing hunting in nature and the wildlife. I think the same way too, you know, just to have these conversations and then it gets put out there in something like a podcast like this. And then, you know, listeners or anyone can be like, man, I resonate with that too, right? And it just kind of fuels that, like you say, that direction of like, this feels right, or this feels like what I should be doing, and yeah, the path that I should be on and the path of least resistance or whatever. But yeah, man, we could do a whole episode on that. We could go down a whole rabbit hole.
I hear you, man. What you brought to the table is absolutely incredible, man. I really appreciate everything that you just said. I mean, it's fantastic. Like, you know, your podcast is fantastic. I love what you're doing. I love the aspect of community that you're bringing. It's just incredible, man. And, you know, I would have to say, you know, to give everyone the opportunity to tune in, where would you want anyone who's listening or watching, for that matter, to check out, or where would you want to go? Where would you want them to go?
So I mean, like, obviously all the like Spotify, Apple Podcast, Podbean, Castfx, I mean, all the podcast platforms that they are, is where you'll hear us talking about things on our neck of the woods. I don't use a lot of the social media tools just from being busy with work and a family, but I do use like Instagram quite a bit for creating like, you know, just the previews of what's coming up, same way like with Bush Stories. You know, it's a good place to show people, this is the guest that we've had and this and that. So yeah, I think, you know, Instagram at alberta.wildlife.stories, and you know, wherever you get your podcasts, right? So yeah.
That's awesome, but, man. You're the best, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Ron, I appreciate you tons. And thank you so much for asking me to come on the show. I don't feel like I deserve to be on it because you have such amazing guests all the time. And it's super cool to be talking to you, man, because I listen to you more than you're probably aware of through your podcast. So, yeah, it's really cool, man.
Now you're one of those guests, buddy. Now you're one of those amazing guests, buddy.
I appreciate it. And I'm sorry if I just go on long tangent runs. I try to bottle it up on my own podcast. And it's a dangerous thing when you open up the can and let me just spew, because that's probably the biggest thing that annoys my wife. She's like, yeah, you don't shut up ever. And then to be on a podcast where I can just talk, I'm like, this could be really dangerous and people could just get super annoyed because I could just, yeah, I don't know. But I appreciate it, man. I appreciate everything, Roth.